Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Just a warning ahead of our next item. Some of the details we're about to discuss might not be for younger ears. Campaigner Vicky Phelan has spoken previously about the impact cancer treatment has on women. And in particular, she says the taboo subject of the difficulties in having sex after treatment for cervical cancer. Well, I'm joined now by Lindsay Blair, who's sex and relationship therapist, to talk about how cancer treatment can impact both on women and men's sex lives. And Lindsay has plenty of hints and tips on how to get things back on track. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Sarah. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you for joining us on this one. As Vicky says, it is a taboo subject and we're trying to remove that taboo today by talking about it. And you advise people post-cancer, it often has directly impacted on their sex lives. What kind of cancer patients are you commonly coming across, Lindsay?
Well, I would mostly work with cervical and prostate. And then maybe some breast and testicular, bowel and bladder as well would commonly impact sex and genital functioning. And in loads of different ways. So, I mean, for women, they might have vaginal atrophy, which is that sort of shrinking of the vagina walls, or they might be left with a shortened vagina after surgery. There might be lots of pain on sex, bleeding, low libido, change of body shape, incontinence, low self-esteem. You know, there's a host of things. And, of course, men might be left with total erectile dysfunction or nerve damage. That cancer really, really impacts, obviously, sex.
And Lindsay, because people are dealing with a cancer diagnosis, they're going through the treatment, they're focused on survival first and foremost. These after effects and the impacts of them on their sex lives, they're bound to take some people by surprise.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really fascinating subject because a lot of the people I speak to would say that they weren't told, so that nobody ever told them that this would have massive impacts, like say even that they would be infertile after some of the treatments because it induces menopause, say even for breast cancer. You might be given hormone treatments that induce menopause and end up infertile, and they say, nobody told us this. Now, I would also go out and train nurses and GPs around speaking about cancer, and what they say is, we did say, but at that time, the patient was probably in such a state of just trying to survive that they're unable to take it in. But, you know, certainly I've worked with women who've been left with, say, 2 centimetres of vagina and haven't known that's what they were left with. And so have attempted penetrative sex. It hasn't worked. And then I'm there in the room trying to figure out what's going on with them. And then I send them back and the guy says, oh, yeah, you know, you only have 2 centimetres. You can't have penetrative sex. You know, and it's like, what happened there that fell down the gap? Even post-cancer, when you think people are asking
questions. But there's just so much to take in. I'm sure it's just completely overwhelming. And going back to Vicky Phelan again, I remember she did an interview with my colleague Mary O'Callaghan about this, and she was saying that she had spoken to a young woman in her early 30s who wasn't in a relationship and was now having to face into, you know, wanting to meet somebody and having to explain this at some point early on in the relationship. But for the people who you meet and who you treat and who are dealing with these problems, the GP is the first port of call often, is it?
Often. I mean, people tend to, and especially when you've been through cancer, which is so focused on the body, they tend to stay focused on the body afterwards, right? So physiological problem, physiological solution. So a lot of the time they go to the GP, like if you're a mom with erectile dysfunction, your first point of call is to ask for Viagra, okay? So get given a Viagra. Women are often given dilators afterwards to help stop vaginal atrophy, and they're told to go and use them. So they look for physiological solutions. But the psychological gets ignored, and you're basically telling people who've had, you know, so much intrusion on the genital area, and it's been such a site of pain and suffering for them, to then go off with Viagra and have fun. Do you know, there's a total disconnect with the genitals at that point. They don't know what fun looks like anymore in that area. What does that even mean? How can we have fun in an area that's been so...
So you're saying there's a disconnect if the treatment is just for the physiological...
Or to the place the treatment is. So, like, you know, if there's a lot of people come at your vagina and looking at it and things going in it and things going up it and all this, then you lose sense of privacy and boundaries and you just lose sense of the vagina being a place of pleasure, do you know? Mm-hmm. In your head, it looks burnt and sore and red and nasty. You don't want to go there. certainly don't want your partner to go there. You know, you've lost all that sense of it being a fun, playful place. And so the idea that you can go and use dilators, or if you're a man, you can go and just take Viagra and get the erection and have sex, it's not reality. You have to first reconnect in to the genitals, kind of start to love them again and take back ownership of them.
Get to know them again. Do you find that you have to work on people in order to get them through to the point where they can talk openly about this? Because as you say, they've dealt with the medical side, they've dealt with lots of medical professionals. And is there an embarrassment or, is it difficult for people to have the conversation with you initially?
It is. It can kind of go two ways, I mean, I'm very into using, you probably just know, correct terminology. The proper words, the proper things, So sometimes I have people coming in to me and they say, I've got a lot of problems down under. And I say, now when you say down under, we're talking about in Australia or in your vagina, so I'm very clear that you have to have the right words. And then we have a bit of a giggle and a laugh about it. Or you get people who are very disconnected. They come in with more terminology than I would ever have, talking in the doctor language because that's what they're used to. Like, this is what's happening for me, this is what's happening. And then I might say something different, like, well, listen, I've heard so much about your vagina, but tell me about you. Like, how are you doing? So it's about, yes, de-shaming, connecting it to emotion, talking a lot about feelings as well as the physiological, and really collaborating with my clients. We do it together, and it's play. And I say, I don't know where we're going to end up, but maybe we can have fun along the way.
And do people expect or want their sex lives to just resume exactly as they were before the cancer happened?
All the time. And I think that's not just the sex. I think it's a lot of things. I think, cancer, your life is on hold. So there's an idea when it's over, you can go back to the way it was, I know a lot of people who put themselves back into work, and it's not a possible thing. They get really tired. They have to work in a different way now. And it's the same with sex. They want to go back to the way sex was. So most people come see me and they say, Lindsay, all we want is to have the sex we were having. Now, that won't happen, okay? And I'm really, really clear about that. Like, the body has changed now, and it won't happen. You're not going to have that type of sex. But perhaps that's okay. Perhaps that's okay. And perhaps the sex you were having isn't as good as you remember it, because things tend to get a little bit idealized when they're lost,
Mm-hmm. The halo effect.
Exactly. So there's an idea that we were having amazing sex. I'm like, where are you really? Like, not a lot of us are, we're very busy. We might have kids. Sex is very functional, It might go breast, thumb, genital penetration. Not a lot else goes on, really. And that's why, of course, when one of those things, like if you lose a breast or if the genitals aren't working like they should, and that's your method of having sex, breast, thumb, genitals, then sex falls apart completely because nobody knows what to do. But that's brilliant, because then you can talk about what to do, and then you can talk about what you want, and then you can tell your partners about a fantasy you've never told them about. And you can find erogenous zones all over your body. The ears are one. The feet. It's everywhere. We have to engage the whole body. So sex won't look the same. But, it might look better. And a lot of my cancer patients afterwards say, we've never been this close. We've never had sex like this. And that might be without penetration, because I don't think sex is necessarily penetration.
So it's not just rebuilding the sexual relationship, it's rebuilding the entire relationship.
The entire relationship, and emotion, and talking about what's been lost, and mourning together, and then moving on to something new and exciting and different. And, women who just, say, go through the menopause anyway have to do this. We all have to, every 10 years probably renegotiate what our bodies want from us. And I think it's a real chance to get something new and wonderful when you're in a couple relationship, if you can bear the mourning.
So, Lindsay, what is the first step here? Or is there a formula that you follow when people come to see you? Or does it depend on who you're talking to?
Absolutely depends on who I'm talking to. Very, very collaborative. I mean, there is a Sensate Focus program that all, sex therapists will know and that we follow, but it's not by any means a script. It's very tailored. And what that basically does is it takes genitals off the table for a long time. So not to get rid of them, but just to say, look, they've been through enough. Everyone's over-concentrating on them. Everyone's staring at at your penis. Let's just put on your boxers and have some fun, Mike. What I would do is I might set couples exercises where they might be in their underwear and they're just exploring the body, and it's not meant to be sexual. It's not meant to have any arousal in it. It's just exploring each other, looking at your hands, looking at your eyes, stroking your hair, re-engaging really slowly. And then we turn up the dial, you know, session by session, exercise by exercise. And usually then, by the time we bring back the genitals back in, well, a couple are already full up on the rest of the body. So the genitals at that point are much more of a dessert. We can take it or leave it, you know? And that's really nice place for the couple to be, and that takes off the pressure. So then not everybody's waiting for the erection. If it comes, great. If it doesn't, fine. And usually what happens at that point is, you know, guess what? The Viagra you were prescribed will work because you're not as worried about it not working. You know, anxiety cuts through desire. So we build it up really slowly, make people feel safe and comfortable again in their bodies before we go back to the sites that are causing the difficulty for them.
So you're suggesting tools and tricks and processes that the people you're talking to, your clients, they probably haven't considered them. Maybe they don't want to consider some of the things that you're suggesting. So you've got to try and break those barriers down too.
Yes. I mean, I often compare it to food. I mean, the way Sensate Focus works is as well is that you're introducing things very slowly with a lot of boundaries. So what I might often say to people is like, look, if you're not hungry at all, you're not going to go into a restaurant where they say you have to eat three courses, all right? So if you have low libido, you're not going to go into sex where you feel it has to end in penetration. You're just not going to do that. It feels like too much. So I say, well, let's go into a tapas menu, all right? And in that tapas menu, you can try one thing, you can taste it, you can play around with it. And if you like it, maybe you want to try another thing, okay? Don't leave. Come back the next day. Then try two things, okay? Now, what you'll see is that people will come in at the beginning and say to me, now, Lindsay, I'm not going to do this, and this. I'm not happy with those things. I'm not comfortable with that, okay? I want sex to look like this. But when we introduce it much more slowly, right, like in that tapas restaurant, when you try a few things and you're having fun, and then you look down the menu and say, ooh, yuck, eels or whatever. You've never tried it before, but you're having fun there. So you might give it a go, do you know? Mm-hmm. That might be growth, or you might like it. And so that's how we introduce, do you see what I mean? That's how you introduce things.
Yeah,
so by the time
they
get there, they want to try new things.
You mentioned mastectomies, you mentioned changed bodies. There are people who might feel that their bodies have changed so much that they just don't have an appetite for sex. This is not what they want to be doing. I mean, how are you getting to the point where desire is back?
You take out the word sex, right, and replace it with intimacy, touch. I usually just use the word play. Because again, what sex means is penetration, and people do not want—they don't want penetration. Like often because it's sore, and often because they've got a low libido when they're not there. They just can't imagine going there, but they might be able to imagine like sitting on the sofa together, holding hands, and having a kiss. And that's enough. And then maybe after that kiss, they might want to try something else. You see what I mean? So it's just really rewording it. I say, well, forget about sex, forget about penetration. I'll hold it in my mind as maybe you want to get there, but forget about it for now. Let's just play, you know? And play has no success and failure. It's just fun. And that's the way I would set up my couples.
Well, Lindsay, it's been fascinating talking to you, and I'm sure it's been very helpful to some people. And if people want to hear more from Lindsay, you've an online Zoom talk on this topic tomorrow. It's for ARC Cancer Support, and you're hoping that people who have gone through cancer treatment or are looking for help will log on. Just remind us what time it's on and how people can access it.
So it's on at 10:30, going on from 10:30 to probably about 12, and they can register by emailing info@arccancersupport.ie.
Okay.
And I'd really encourage people to come on and just, you know, chat to me as well, because I learn so much from everyone. It's not just about people learning from me.
Okay, so that email address, info@arccancersupport.ie, info@arccancersupport.ie, and we'll tweet out that email address as well. Lindsay Blair, psychosexual therapist, thank you very much for joining
us
on the
program.
Thanks
so much, Claire.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.